Me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver. Welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard. Thanks for being with me today. I'm excited, as always, to introduce today's guest. We're going to be talking about relationships and kind of similar to the topic we were talking about with Dr. Stan Tatkin a few weeks ago with different attachment styles. But this is a brand new book written by Susan Campbell and John Gray, who did the Mars and Venus books. And it's called 5-Minute Relationship Repair. We're going to be speaking with John Gray in a few weeks. But today we are speaking with Susan Campbell, who is one of the authors, and she trains coaches and therapists throughout the U.S. and Europe to integrate the tools that are in this book into their professional practices. And in her own practice, she works with singles, couples, and work teams to help them communicate respectfully and responsibly. And she's the author of Getting Real, Saying What's Real, and a bunch of other books, and she lives in California. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with me today. So let's start with, you actually mentioned Dr. Stan Tatkin quite a few times throughout the book, and I'm a big fan of his, so I love that you all know each other and work together. Right. What inspired you and John to write 5-Minute Relationship Repair?
Well, over the years, I've been working with couples for 45 years. Over the years, it seems like there's basically one issue that couples need to learn to work with better, and that is when they get triggered. When those emotional reactions start to go on in your nervous system, and then your mind makes up worst-case fear stories about your partner and what your partner's behavior means, like your partner says, I've got to go to bed now, and you get your rejection button pushed because you were hoping for a longer evening together. And then you start making up stories like, this relationship's more important to me than it is to him. And that whole process seems to really wreak havoc with the ability to communicate as two people who care about each other. All of a sudden, they're at odds with each other, and you start to see your partner as the foe rather than the friend that they really are.
Mm. And it's interesting because you talk throughout the book as well about co-triggering. So one person gets triggered, and then they behave in a reactive way that triggers the other partner's fears, and then that's how the fight starts.
Well, yeah, we're very sensitive to one another when we're in a mutually dependent or interdependent kind of relationship. Stan Tatkin says relationships like a three-legged race, and we quote him in our book because we love that concept that if you fall, I fall. And so people really need the tools to learn how to pick ourselves up and realize that we're so wired together. Like my sense of security, if you don't like something I did, I'm all of a sudden, you were triggered. You're triggered, you're telling me you don't like something I did. All of a sudden, now I'm triggered. What? You don't like what I did? My rejection and abandonment or being criticized buttons get pushed. And so it's very natural for us to be co-triggering each other. And so we obviously need tools for dealing with that mess.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious, actually, because you also teach people who work together. So what if you're not in a relationship, a romantic relationship? Can you still use the 5-minute relationship repair tools for people like coworkers or close friends?
Yes.
Or family?
Yeah, I teach people about triggering and the fact that it happens to work teams, too, or just sometimes I just give lectures to corporate audiences to help them become more emotionally intelligent. But you wouldn't process it the same way with a workmate, but it certainly helps to have the language and to go, oh, whoa, I see now that I'm getting triggered, so I better pause and calm myself down and then come back and talk about what needs I really had that weren't being met, and they could be needs for common shared goals of the team. It's not so much emotional needs, but emotional triggers happen in the workplace, of course, but then we have to be able to translate it in the business, toward the business goals. It's very useful in corporations. A few people are getting that now, that we need to study how emotions affect our ability to get along at work.
Definitely. Well, we are talking right now with Susan Campbell. She is the co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. Now, Susan, you mentioned a couple of the steps already, the pausing and the calming down. So can we talk a little bit about what that means?
Yeah. As a couple, if you realize that you kind of keep having the same fight over and over in different ways, it doesn't get resolved, but it's the same, when I say the same fight, I mean it's that same sinking feeling, like I'm not getting through to this person, or something like that, or I'm not being heard, or geez, I always seem to be the bad guy here, you know, some sinking feeling that's a recurring theme. The couple will, in the book we teach people to recognize what your vicious cycle is, what's your recurring theme, and what do you feel. How do we notice the early warning signals that myself or my partner is triggered? And some of those would be body sensations, like heart rate going up and so forth, or stories like my partner doesn't care about me, and emotions like anger or the feeling like I've just got to get out of here. So those are the early warning signals. And so then we teach people, when you notice one of those things going on in yourself, you agree together as a couple to have a pause signal so that you don't keep digging your hole deeper. So couples will have a conversation when they're not triggered about, hey, what do we do when one of us recognizes we're triggered? Let's give both people the power to stop it by anybody being able to say pause, and then we agree. If we hear that word, or it could be a different word, you make up your own word, we'll go inside and just relax, try to relax ourselves, calm ourselves. And so then the next step is the calming step, where we give people various breath practices, sensory awareness practices that get you in touch with the here and now of your experience. And it usually helps you feel like you're more connected and able to come back and talk. And then there's the repair process. We have a 3-step formula: pause, calm, and repair. So those are the first 2 steps, pause and calm.
Beautiful. Well, Susan, it's interesting, actually, you mentioned the stories that we make up in our heads, and those stories at the time feel so real.
Yeah.
There's a study you mentioned in the book on the brain hemispheres by Michael Gazzaniga.
Yeah, right. That's a famous study.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you mind sharing that with us? Because I found that so fascinating.
Yeah, they were inadvertently discovered. First of all, I'll give you the bottom line conclusion here that we draw in the book, is the idea that the mind makes up stories when the nervous system is agitated. Okay, so that's the point I'm making here. And the research was done quite a while ago when they were trying to cure epilepsy, and this Michael Gazzaniga did an experiment where because they were doing some kind of brain operation that needed to be done, they cut the corpus callosum, which is the part, the bundle of nerves that goes between the right hemisphere and the left hemisphere. And in like the right hemisphere is like the storytelling brain, the brain that tries to decide why would I do something like that. And the other side of the brain is the brain that more just has the feelings but doesn't really have to think about it that much. And so they put couples, this wasn't couples, this was just individuals. They put individuals in a situation where they would stimulate the kind of feeling centers of the brain, and like the center for humor. There's a center that they know about for, that makes people laugh. So they stimulated the laughing center in the brain, and there was then they asked this person who didn't have the connection between the two sides of the brain, why are you laughing? And the brain just, I mean, the right brain just made up stories like, well, your experimenter's wearing a funny tie, or this is a stupid, silly experiment. And so they thought they kind of proved that you don't really know why you're doing things half the time, but the mind needs to make up stories. It's just what the mind does. So we need to start questioning the stories that our minds make up. That's the conclusion here.
It's interesting. Thank you for sharing that story. I believe it was people with epilepsy, so they would cut the corpus callosum to...
Right, it was a study about curing epilepsy.
Yeah. But it's interesting because you have a fictitious couple in your book that sort of travels through the book with you and use them as examples. And she is constantly... brings up this feeling of not being a priority to her partner. And I totally recognize that comes up for me. Like if I feel any sense of rejection or disappointment, immediately the story is, I'm this person's last priority.
Yeah, and you, like you said, those stories feel so believable. They feel like the truth when you're in the triggered state. But when you learn a little bit more, when your whole brain, by reading this book, learns a little more about how the mind works, how the nervous system operates, and well, one thing we need to learn about how the nervous system operates is we are wired to scan for danger in the primitive part of the brain, and that's the part of the brain that has the amygdala in it, and we call it the survival alarm system in your nervous system, but there's a part of the nervous system that's wired to be very vigilant about anything that seems to threaten our basic survival needs. But now, you know, your basic survival need, coming back to you and your partner, is it's not like a survival need, but emotional needs, like the need to feel like I'm important to my partner, that I matter, that I'm loved. Those needs are to a relationship like survival needs are to an individual. And so it feels like the relationship's survival is threatened. And so it's like, it's no wonder our nervous systems are going to start going crazy and the alarms are going off. And then in order to explain why we're so upset, then the mind makes up the stories. It's very useful to just know how all this works. It takes the blame off the table. It helps you not say, well, gee, aren't you more grown up than that? Because we're all wired that way, however grown up we are or not, you know, it's just in our nervous system.
Well, we are speaking right now with Susan Campbell. She is the author, a co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair. She wrote that along with John Gray. And we are talking right now about the stories that we make up in our heads when we get triggered. But Susan, you mentioned how you believe that story while you're still triggered. But I noticed for myself that I don't have to be still triggered to still be believing that story that I'm not a priority.
Like that's the thing. No, you know why that happens? Because you haven't repaired those hurts in each time they happen. Ideally, and of course there's not an ideal world here, but ideally a couple would repair each one of these misunderstandings, these triggering episodes, because the repair process, which you and I haven't talked about yet, that's the big deal about what the book's about. It's about being able to step back and realize what was going on and learn how to tell your partner about the fact that your fear of rejection was triggered, that your reaction was to, let's say, start questioning him a lot, or maybe your reaction was to start withdrawing and pulling away. But once you don't learn this repair process, you're much more able to take an observer point of view, at least when you're calm here and you're writing down all these things like, this was my story, this was my bodily sensation, this was the core need that felt like it was not being met, like the need that I'm important to him. And we give people a list of various self-diagnostic categories that help them have a better language for revealing in a vulnerable way what their deeper needs were and what their actual need for reassurance is, or what they actually need from their partner in order to feel resolved about the whole thing. So you keep building up stereotypes, you know, about your partner. I'm responding to the fact that you said, you know, it feels generally believable all throughout our daily life, at least off and on, even when I'm not triggered. You have begun to build up a stereotype picture of your partner. This is very common, and it's due to repeated unresolved triggering episodes. Mm. I know that this isn't a totally one-size-fits-all formula. You know, I'm sounding like this is the way it always is. But I would say that just about every couple that learns how to work with triggers in this way, they don't build up these stereotyped ways of thinking, and they're really connecting. They have to repair a lot at first. You have to, you know, make up a lot and dig in a lot to what your real feelings were underneath your reactive behaviors. But once you do that work, you know, and it is some work, then you can repair very quickly, and you don't keep that stereotype. The whole idea here is to clear the past so we can be present and learn how much the past messes with the present. And so we help people get in touch with, you know, the early memories of trauma or neglect or abuse, those kind of things that contribute to some of these triggers, and reveal that to your partner too.
Well, Susan, I'm really glad that you're on the show today, because I feel like this book, The 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences and to Strengthen Love, I feel like it's so important, because there's so many people who are just running on our triggers all the time, and we're not even conscious of it half the time, even after the fact. I mean, I guess the first step is recognizing that you do this after the fact. And then you can start noticing it while you're in the moment with practice. But I noticed that a lot of couples, there will be one person who is willing to put in the work. And the other person might be, maybe if you say, can we pause for a moment, like you may be able to impact them in that way. But they're not necessarily willing to put in the work to analyze what they're feeling in their body, or the fear, or even just to sit down for 5 minutes and talk about it. So what do you do if you're in a situation where you're willing to work and your partner's not?
Well, there's a lot of self-work that you can do, and we have a chapter called Compassionate Self-Inquiry, and this is something we all need to be doing whether we're paired or not anyway, whenever our buttons get pushed. And the process basically goes like this. You start with, oh, I'm triggered, and you feel the feelings, and you stay with those feelings. It's basically not resisting what's coming up in your experience. That's the idea of self-inquiry. It's a self-nurturing practice. So you listen deeper. Okay, I'm hurting. Okay, I'm just able to have space, like a compassionate witness space for that hurting part of me, that agitated part. I mean, and you know, I leave room for the stories, but it's almost like there's a big nurturing adult comforting this little wounded child. They're both parts of you, but you bring a parental love to yourself when you're hurting. And very often when you just give space like that, and you don't make up stories, you don't go, you know, well, this is a good learning experience. You don't make up any stories, you know, even that one. You just feel and sense and see what comes into your awareness. Very often an old wound or trauma will come into your awareness when you do this work. And this, you don't need a partner to do this. This is you doing some self-healing. And if you, you know, I'll finish it in a minute, but finish the process. But you do some self-healing, that will impact your partnership no matter what. It might make you come across as less needy and insecure if that's an issue in your couple. Not that you shouldn't have needs, but that you're more able to handle the normal emotional pains. When you know how to do this compassionate self-inquiry process, you're going to know how to handle the normal emotional pains that come with an adult relationship or a parenting relationship either. You know, close relationships have normal emotional pains. And you learn to take emotional pain a little more in stride, not being callous or cavalier, but being always tender, so that you are, in a sense, reassuring yourself that some of the stuff you learned as a child, like when you're in pain, often when you were a little kid and you were in pain, you got some kind of a message from the adults that that was really inconvenient for them. Either it made them feel like a bad parent, or they just didn't have time for it, or they'd stuff a toy in your face if you were whimpering or whatever. But you got some, especially in our achievement-oriented cultures here in the West, we get this message that emotional pain means that there's some little flaw in us. And that is totally wrong. We need to embrace the normal, I don't mean the dramatized pains, but the normal, real pains. And they will pass right through us. They will go to completion. If you'd had a parent that just held you and reassured you when you were hurting, that pain would just go through its natural cycle. It would go to completion. You'd be relaxed. You'd feel safe again with that parent. Well, a lot of us didn't have that kind of parent, so we provide that for ourselves now so that when I have that memory, for me the memory is I'm in a crib because I've had a lot of hypnosis work, and I can remember way back. I'm in a crib, and I'm crying for food and touch, and nobody's coming. And so I'm this little baby, and so I have this, you know, tremendous button about being neglected, sort of like you, you know, being rejected, neglected. And so whenever, like, somebody says they're going to want to see me, and then they back out on me or something, and I get that little button pushed and that rejection feeling comes up, if I just feel into how that is, that little kid not being able to get attention, not being able to get those needs met, and feeling compassion and tenderness. And through that, over time, that's a practice you do every time you get triggered, just like the repair process if you've got a partner who will do that with you. Every time you get triggered, you bring more emotional security. You rewire your own nervous system to feel like your needs are okay, and it's okay to feel frustration of that need and just be with yourself. Nobody's bad or wrong. Your partner's not bad or wrong. You're not bad or wrong. It's just what is, and you know how to handle it because it's just the way relationships are. Differences. You know, we have differences. That's the way relationships are. That's one of our evolutionary challenges, to learn to evolve as a species to the place where we can hold differences and really respect differences and learn from them. That's the subtitle of the book, Using Differences to Strengthen Love.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for a break. We are speaking right now with Susan Campbell. She is the co-author, along with John Gray, of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. And if you want to get in touch with Susan Campbell, you can go to her website, susancampbell.com. This is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we'll be back in a moment.
Be intrigued and inspired by years of research and groundbreaking ideas in a matter of minutes. Attend a 3-minute thesis event on March 10th or 12th, featuring powerful research presentations from UBC graduate students in 3 minutes or less. Attendance is free this March 10th and 12th. Check out the website 3mt.grad.ubc.ca for event times and location.
Hello. Bonjour. My name is Aaron Joseph from CITR 101.9 FM here in Vancouver, British Columbia. In the next few days, myself as well as other colleagues from around the province will be joining in on the festivities put on by Rendezvous de la Francophonie. In an effort to celebrate the French culture here in our backyard, we've decided to shine the spotlight on everyday Francophones living in our community.
Hi, I'm Vincent Massieu. I'm 27 years old. I was born in Etampes, near Paris, France, and I now live in Vancouver, British Columbia. It's a different culture. We learn a lot when we're kids how to live and appreciate good food and good wine and have good values in life and share with the people you love. Well, I have a lot of French friends. We created our own little community, and we always hang out together. I also come out play soccer with my friends, which reminds me of France, and have good dinner between friends, spend Christmas together, all of this for training. Zinedine Zidane, one of the greatest soccer players of all time. Well, he made us win our only World Cup so far. I love soccer since I'm very little, so he made me dream, and that's why I like to play soccer too. Yeah, I love all the French music. There is definitely a different vibe to it. And the French literature is amazing, lots of great writers, and there's always new artistic stuff from France that comes up that are really interesting. Le mot du jour est savoir vivre. Ça veut dire it's how to enjoy life every day and to do it well. So, my name is Vincent Massieu, et je suis francophone.
For more information on the Rendezvous de la Francophonie project, visit us at rvf.ca.
Fun Drive 2015. 0, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000.
Fun Drive 2015. Fun Drive 2015 has concluded with a bang. We're almost at our $40,000 goal, which will allow us to complete the digitization of our reel-to-reel archives and make decades worth of independent radio history accessible online. And because our current site is full of kinks and always on the verge of
meltdown,
this money will go towards a new website which will make accessing CITR easier than ever before. For less than the price of a coffee, pledge to help preserve CITR's past and future. Or donate more and receive great prizes. CITR apparel, framed Discorder art, a new tape which collects historic live music from CITR, and more. Go online at CITR.ca to pledge. Donate today, and let's get digital.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking with Susan Campbell. She is the co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. And just before the break, we were talking about compassionate self-inquiry. And you mentioned, Susan, that we're not even supposed to put a label on it as like, this is a good learning experience. I find that that's one of the biggest things that I try. Like, I thought that that was an effective way to view problems. So why is that a problem?
Oh, it's not a problem in any sense other than when you're giving yourself compassion. What I meant to say was you're being with yourself. You don't try to do anything that might talk yourself out of the actual state you're in. That's all I meant.
Mm. Okay. Well, the learning, did you want to say something more about that?
I mean, I totally believe that everything is a learning experience, and that's what life is about. It's not about belief systems here. It's about how to be with yourself when you're in pain. And there's a time for, you know, a time for making sense out of something and a time for following the feeling wherever it takes you.
And that's,
it's like meditation. If, you know, sometimes, I mean, there's different ways of practice meditation, but if you just allow whatever arises to come to consciousness, it's a meditative frame of mind that I'm talking about here. Later on, you can, you know, give yourself a pep talk, but when you're inquiring, It's just a slightly different attitude. It's not very easy to explain, but it's explained pretty well in the book. There's steps to it, and you just basically imagine that you're being with a child in pain. And oh no, a lot of parents will try to talk to their children and talk some sense into them. And I think to really, this is a point of view, my point of view, that rather than talking some sense into the emotional body of the little child right away, it's better just hold the space and let them cry it out and know that what they're feeling is okay. Because nature gives us what we need to heal ourselves. If we just, stop interfering with the mind saying you shouldn't be feeling this. There's just too much of the shouldn't be doing this in a lot of our emotional makeups, and I'm trying to guard against that.
Mm. Yeah, I noticed that that's one of the biggest things is I won't just have a feeling, I'll judge myself about it, or I'll judge really the whole situation and the partner and all of that. And I want to talk a little bit more about the repair process. I don't want to give everything away because I think everyone should read this book, but what would you like to share? What do you think is the most important thing listeners need to get about this repair process?
Well, the repair process is basically a time where a couple agrees after they've paused and calmed themselves, they agree that, okay, we're going to get back together and we're going to talk about this. And, a lot of couples will say that, we're going to talk about this, but what they wind up doing is just getting back into the argument again. Well, or trying to explain themselves, maybe something that they didn't say before. If I could just, get this one point across, then he would understand me. That's not what we mean by repair. We believe that when you let people just keep talking, a lot of times they go back into their automatic defensive patterns, and they don't show their most vulnerable, authentic, sometimes even fragile feelings. And so we give couples a script that names it. Basically, they've done some pre-work to be able to do these repair scripts quickly and easily, but the repair script can be delivered to your partner in less than 1 minute. It doesn't even take 5 minutes. It's a fill-in-the-blank script that you do during your calming down period, and it asks you to say what happened, and the specific thing that happened, not what you thought happened, not what your ego mind did with what happened, but what actually happened. Like, when I saw you walk out while I was speaking, and then you say, I got triggered. So you're able to admit that you got triggered, so you're not blaming your partner. And then you will say, I felt hurt or something. You'll say whatever your feeling was. And we give people a list of feelings to choose from if they have trouble figuring out what their core feeling is. But that's all been prepped for. To be able to deliver this, you already know what your core feelings are and your core needs are that you tend to gravitate toward. Like, some people really gravitate toward the need to feel that they matter, that they're important, that they're valued. Other people, their core needs are more to feel like I'm okay, that I'm adequate, that I'm enough for you, that I'm good enough. Like, we have Donna and Eric in our book, which is a composite of typical couple, where her core need is to feel like she's important to him, and his core need is, can't you see I'm important to you? I do all this stuff that you never appreciate. I work all the time. She goes, well, that's the problem. You're working all the time. You're not making us a priority. You hear the cycle. And he's feeling not appreciated. So, his core need, and when he comes back to repair, he has already gotten in touch with the fact, this is because we take you through a lot of pre-work in order to be able to deliver this repair statement in an authentic, real way. He's done pre-work to know that underneath all of his, you never appreciate me, is a core fear that he's not good enough. And that some of the ways that he falls down on the job are going to be found out by her and judged by her. And so he reveals his core fears And his core need is to feel like I'm acceptable to you, that I am good enough. And that would be very different than the repair statement that Donna would deliver. She would, I mean, her fill-in-the-blank script is the same, but she fills it in with different words because her core needs is to feel like she's important. So she speaks her language, he speaks his language. They basically take turns reading. They read the repair statement, which is the basically, if I had it to do over, given that this is what was going on inside of me, if I had it to do over, here's what I wished I would have said to you if I'd been fully present and conscious and really aware that all that triggering story and that emotional reaction was a fear reaction. Mm-hmm. So we teach people how to reveal their fears rather than acting them out on the partner.
Thank you.
So it basically ends with, and I would have asked for reassurance that, and then you know, like instead of going through the drama that I went through, whatever it was, or the shutdown that I went through, or the unconscious behavior that I went through, because triggered reactions look very different, you know, with different personality types. It's not always some blow-up. Most of the time, it's actually some kind of avoidance, as you probably know. Most people avoid rather than try to confront it at all. So we give people a safe way, if they will follow the script, a safe way to make up after a fight. That's what the repair statement is. And it ends with, I would have asked for reassurance that I am good enough for you, that type of thing. Mm. And then that just melts the partner's heart, and then usually the partner can give that reassurance. If they're not able to, they have to go back to calming. If they trigger each other again during the repair process, which can happen, you know, this process, you know, works pretty good, but you have to practice it to get good at it. If you get triggered while you're doing it, then you go back and pause, calm, and repair again. Try again.
Hmm. Thank you, Susan. Well, it is time for another break. This is Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and right now we're speaking with Susan Campbell. She's one of the co-authors of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. We'll be back in a moment.
Are You Aware Radio, alternate Thursday 6 to 7 p.m. at CITR 101.9 FM. Profiling music and musicians take the route of positive action over apathy.
So we're talking about 5-minute relationship repair, and we were talking about the repair process. Now, Susan, I had Dr. Stan Takin, who is mentioned throughout the book, referenced quite a bit. He was on Synchronicity just a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking with about texting the guy and got in this big fight and yada, yada, yada. Anyway, I'm still seeing this guy, and I noticed we trigger each other quite a bit. And we're actually making efforts to work through that, even just to maintain our friendship. But I'm curious, how do you do the repairing and the co-regulating, which we haven't talked too much about, while you're in a dating relationship where you're not seeing each other every day, or maybe you're married but your partner's out of town or he's at work all day? How do you deal with those issues as they come up when you can't necessarily be face-to-face?
Well, you texting would be the least ideal way to try to resolve anything. You can do this kind of thing on the telephone, but first I need to say that this is a practice, just like yoga is a practice. And particularly in dating, you need to have an agreement with the partner that you guys both value healing through differences, managing your reactivity in a different way, rewiring your nervous systems to be more secure, those kind of things, that you both value growth and that you're willing to take on this practice. I wrote a book, Truth in Dating, by the way, which is about dating as a spiritual awareness practice, where you agree, whether you wind up being partners or not, you agree that these kind of communication tools are something you will use, that you will clear the air regularly and use, you know, and use a very similar process to what John and I have in this book. And so you can have that I call it the truth in dating conversation. You can have this conversation. You can say, hey, I read this book, 5-Minute Relationship Repair, and, you know, the author suggests that you can even do this while you're dating. And, you know, let's take a look at a few things here and see if this intrigues you. And, you know, we can do it. But you'll have to do things by phone or Skype or something. I don't really recommend texting, but, you know, some people are texting is your way. So I don't know. You know, I don't want to take too strong of a stand. However, whatever gets the job done, do it, you know.
Well, that brings up another question, and then I want to talk more about co-regulating. But if you mentioned your book, Truth in Dating, and looking at dating as a spiritual experience or opportunity for growth, which I love. And part of that, because you mentioned earlier about we were talking about how everything is a learning experience. And as a relationship expert, I'm just curious your opinion. Is it effective to date someone who triggers you and work through it with them? Or would you be better off just looking for someone who it's a lot easier with right from the get-go?
Well, you know, we're all on a different path. So, you know, that's an individual choice. But I will say what some of the trade-offs are. If you're emotionally pretty secure and you've got a partner who triggers you and they're willing to do this work with you, it's a gold mine, you know, because you can grow tremendously if you've got a partner who's willing to do this work. If you've got somebody who triggers you terribly or you trigger them and they're not willing to do the work, I would say get out right now. You know, really. You know, save you. But so that's, you know, that's a partial answer to what you said. What did I miss? Because there was a little more I wanted to say, but I forgot the rest of your question.
Oh, I was just wondering if, I mean, the person that I'm referring to seems to be willing to do the work, so I feel like it could be valuable even if we're not going to be a long-term partnership. But wouldn't it be easier just to find someone who is more easygoing or who I just naturally don't feel triggered by as often?
Well, while this guy is in your life, go ahead and have the truth in dating conversation and do this, and mm-hmm. keep your options open. You know, it's not a either or.
All right.
And maybe if you do this work together, maybe you'll find you fall deeply in love in a very secure way, and start healing each other. You know, that's the both the good news and the bad news there.
Yeah,
because if you are with somebody who triggers you, they may always trigger you a little bit, but you will learn how to process the triggers so quickly. I mean, I can do this. I have as deep a wounds as anybody else, and I can do this process so quickly now within myself, and then with my partner. Fortunately, I also have a partner who's willing to do this work, and that's huge. In terms of finding somebody who you're more like naturally compatible with, you know, you might find you have a more peaceful life in some ways, but maybe there's less learning. So it depends on what your path is. I wouldn't say just go ahead and be a glutton for punishment. You know, if you're pretty insecure and easily agitated about a lot of things, maybe it would be better to pick somebody who triggers. Who sets off that trigger? Maybe, yes. Don't avoid the trigger, but who sets it off? But not quite so much, or something. I mean, in an ideal world.
All right, thank you for that, Susan. So we are still talking about 5-minute relationship repair, quickly heal upsets, deepen intimacy, and use differences to strengthen love. We're speaking with Susan Campbell. She is the co-author of this book, along with John Gray, who is the Mars and Venus guy.
I can tell you, it's not the Mars-Venus John Gray.
Oh, it's not?
My co-author is John Michael Gray. It's spelled G-R-E-Y, and so, you know, I'm so sorry.
I didn't realize that. Well, thank you for correcting me.
It's an easy mistake to make because, you know, Mars-Venus is so popular.
Yes. Okay.
This guy's brilliant. You're going to interview him in a month or so.
I am. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll love him.
Awesome. Well, oh my goodness. I can't believe I made that mistake. So thank you so much for correcting me on that. So we were talking, I mentioned that I'd like to discuss co-regulating because that's so important. Where do you want to start with that?
Well, co-regulating is probably a term that not that many of our listeners have heard of, but it's a marriage therapist term, and it's a neuroscience term. It comes from attachment theory, which is very popular these days. It's been around a while, but now it's becoming more popular. Books about attachment theory means that some of us are more securely attached than others based on the kind of parenting we had, basically. You know, if your core needs are met, like, you know, your needs to feel loved and cherished and safe and protected and guided, you know, you're going to have a stronger wiring in your nervous system. I'm giving you a lot of background here because I think it's useful when we get to how co-regulating can help your nervous system, even after childhood. You might not have gotten it with your parents, but you can almost like reparent each other. So that's what co-regulation does. But because certain people didn't get enough parenting, their wiring is kind of weak, the wiring that reassures the being that she's safe, you know, that during that calm period that says, you know, oh, you're actually safe here, but you're, you know, it's like your whole ability to do that is flawed. But co-regulation means giving your partner the things that babies need and also adults need in order to feel secure and loved. And that is touch, like loving touch, soothing voice tones, and eye contact that has a gentle, loving feeling to it. So eye contact, soothing voice tones, and touch. Loving touch. Hugs would be a good example. So that's what co-regulation means. It means those three things or those varieties of those. Nurturing behaviors, reassuring behaviors towards your partner. So when we learn how to regulate our own nervous system by doing like the compassionate self-inquiry thing, that's self-regulation. Co-regulation is giving that kind of reassurance and compassion and love to another human being. And when you offer, like let's say your partner, you can see your partner starting to get triggered, and you say something soothing and friendly, like, you know, I'm pretty sure we're going to get through this. I'm with you here. I love you. You know, that would be co-regulating to your partner's nervous system. You would be helping soothe their upset nerves. And if we learn to do that for one another on a regular basis, and of course it's co-regulation is part of the repair process. You know, when I was telling you about that script, co-regulation is part of the repair script. Over and over, repeated doses, you are helping your partner heal a faulty wiring in their nervous system so they can instinctively realize, oh my God, I'm triggered. The stories in my mind are not true. My partner feels like a foe, but he's really my friend. We're going to get through this. So you get the ability to calm and reassure yourself once you've had enough co-regulation by another human being. And if you didn't get it from your parent, you can get it from your spouse and give it to your spouse right now.
Mm. Thank you for mentioning the we're going to get through this and I love you, because I've had my last boyfriend, we would trigger each other and he would get really escalated and would want to immediately discuss it and basically fight about it for hours, which was much more draining for him than it was for me. So after the first couple of times, I started saying, I'm going to leave. Like, we're not going to talk about this right now. And then rather than saying, we'll talk about this later, we'll get through this, I just said, I'm going to leave. And that would hugely trigger him. And
right.
He would think that I was saying, we're over.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case, but it just made things so much worse. So just saying, I know we're going to get through this, let's take a moment or a day or however long you agree. And in the book, I think you mention how obviously the sooner you're able to deal with it, the better.
Yeah, and sometimes you don't have to pause and calm. You can quickly co-regulate, like the examples I just gave. So I'm glad that was useful to you.
Yeah, I would have been useful to have a couple years
ago. That would have been useful then, but really. Have that little phrase in your hip pocket. But, when you're triggered, you might not even feel like you believe it. But, and I don't really believe in fake it till you make it. I'm the getting real gal. My trademark is getting real and being authentic. But it's not exactly faking it till you make it. It's like knowing that there's a higher part of your brain. If you say, I know we're going to get through this, and you don't, in the moment you're triggered, you don't really quite believe it, you're just really yielding to the fact that you're triggered, and all the things you think you know right now are bullshit, and the things that really are true are the things that are more the vulnerable truth. I need you, I want to feel connected to you. We're going to get through this. I love you. Those are the more true things usually, but they're often covered with defensive things that feel more true because they've got a bigger emotional charge on them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just need to apologize if anyone was driving with their kids and offended by that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But
I
that's
said
okay.
That.
No, it's fine.
I forgot we had people here.
I would love to talk about the importance of repairing quickly, because I think partially with that example I gave of the ex-boyfriend, I think it was, on one hand, it was a good idea to back away and not hash it out for hours on end, but you do need to repair it. So what's the significance of doing it quickly?
Well, the longer you sit, remember we were talking about how you can kind of stereotype your partner and start believing the worst case stories your mind makes up, like he doesn't care about me or he's so over emotional or whatever your stories are. The quicker you address the fact that I am triggered, I need to calm myself, and now we need to go back and repair, you just short circuit that building a case and all that stuff. Storytelling that tends to happen.
Well, thank you. We were speaking with Susan Campbell. She is the co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. And we just have a few minutes left in the show. Susan, I'm wondering where you would like to take it for the last few minutes.
Well, let's see. Thinking of, there's another whole piece in the book about becoming a more self-aware communicator, even when you're not really triggered, but just being aware of how your whole personality often, you go through life like being either a people pleaser or an avoider or somebody who overthinks everything. There's ways that you have communication habits that are kind of, people are full of these communication habits. We call them control patterns. And let me see if I can find the list of control patterns in the book here. It's there's a section. Yeah, here it is. There's a whole section where it's like a little checklist. It's fun for you to do with a partner or just with yourself, where you look at. Here's one, replying too quickly rather than taking in what was said. That would be a control pattern. Giving gifts or favors in order to win approval or acceptance. Smiling and nodding to make the other person think that you're listening to them. There's a lot of normal things that seem like parts of people's personalities, but to a sensitive partner, once we get a little more sensitive, I mean sensitive in a good way, emotionally aware partner, when you use these control patterns, your partner is going to feel less close to you. And the reason you use these control patterns is to almost guard against something bad happening. Like if I'm smiling and nodding in order to make you think that I'm listening to you and interested in you, maybe I'm guarding against you not liking me. And that, of course, that would push my buttons if I thought you didn't like me. So I try to be nice all the time, even if I really disagree. So there's like three pages of things that ask, you know, telling people what they want to hear while suppressing your own needs or opinions.
Oh, that one
making
drives me
a joke
nuts.
Or a cute remark in order to laugh off something that really hurt you. They're all little cover-ups that are so common. But if we can start to identify those and say, yeah, I do that, yeah, I do that. I do this in workshops. And people love to become a little more aware that underneath those control patterns, there's some kind of a fear of emotional discomfort. And I mentioned that the compassionate self-inquiry process was designed to help you take emotional discomfort more in stride. And identifying your control patterns helps you just own up to the fact that, yeah, there is this fear of emotional discomfort, and I have developed some of these communication habits that mask what I'm really feeling in order to kind of control. I call them control patterns because you're trying to control how the other person responds to you in some way so things don't happen that you don't think you're able to handle. So that's a whole really interesting, for those of you who are into like deep self-awareness out there listening, there's several sections like this that just help you become a more self-aware and authentic communicator.
Okay, yeah, I got to admit, though, I'm going through the list and I'm looking at it and I'm going, I really don't want to admit that I do that, but I probably do. So it can be a little painful, a bit of a rude awakening to be like, wow, look at all of the things I've like ticked off.
Yeah, everyone says that.
Yeah.
Just what you just said. They go, oh my God, look at this. But when we do it in a group, see, or when you do it with a partner, I did it with my partner when we were first dating, and, it actually led to a few misunderstandings because I'm saying, no, honey, I'm just confessing this is a control pattern, but it's not like I'm justifying that I do this. This is a confession, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If you do it in a supportive environment, it can kind of take the sting out of it.
That actually, a book group could be an interesting way to work through this.
Oh, yeah, this would be great for a book group because there's so many practical activities that, you know, you can do for homework and then come back and talk about it the next week.
Mm-hmm. And especially if couples could go to the group together, that would be really good.
Yeah, in fact, some people have already told me that they've invited a bunch of couples. That's funny you mention that because, as I said, they've already said I've invited a bunch of couples to have a study group around the book.
Cool. All right. Well, if people want to get the book or get in touch with you, 5-Minute Relationship Repair, where should they do that?
Well, SusanCampbell.com, and we also have a website, 5MinuteRelationshipRepair.com, and that's 5 spelled out like F-I-V-E. And on that website, there's really a lot of interesting articles. There's some interviews with us, some videos with us talking about the book, and there'll be a lot more video self-help tools as we go along with this new website.
Ooh, exciting. Well, thank you so much for your time. Is there anything you want to add before we say goodbye, Susan?
Well, if anybody, I do personal coaching on the phone and on Skype. And if this approach appeals to you, you can email me and we can talk.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time, Susan. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And I look forward to talking with John in a few weeks.
Great.
Okay,
thanks.
Thank you. Take
care.
Have
a
good one. So that was Susan Campbell, co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, Quickly Heal Upsets, Deepen Intimacy, and Use Differences to Strengthen Love. And DJ Chris Terrific is right behind me. Oh, my goodness. He is just quick to namaste. So he's coming up in just a moment with Parts Unknown. This has been Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and I'll be back with you next week. So take care. Have a wonderful week. Be well. I love you so much.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Fund Drive 2015. 0. 10,000. 20,000. 30,000. 40,000.